We're just hours from the crucifixion as we open Luke 23 this morning. Last Lord's Day, we followed the Apostle Peter from the Last Supper to the home of the high priest where Jesus' trial began. Though there are many key figures involved in this travesty of justice, there is Annas and Caiaphas and Herod and Barabbas. I want us this morning to focus our attention on Pilate. Not only was he more involved with Jesus than the others, but Pilate gives us a remarkable testimony about the character of Christ and his innocence. You know, you could be skeptical if one of Jesus' friends said he was innocent. But here is a man who condemned Jesus to death, who said he was innocent. That would be meaningful in any court of law. The first thing we note about Pilate is that he is riding the fast track to political power. Pilate is a man whose life is well known in the pages of secular history as well as in the pages of Scripture. He was a Roman citizen born in Italy, approximately 1 BC. So he's a contemporary of Jesus, just a few years younger. He was married, a member of the equestrian class in Rome, and quite wealthy. His early career is unknown, but he must have held a number of administrative or military positions before being appointed governor of an important province like he was. The picture we get is definitely one of an ambitious young politician seeking to climb the ladder of political power and prestige. Pilate was appointed as the fifth governor of Judea in AD 26 by the emperor Tiberius. His area of jurisdiction was Samaria, Judea, and as far south as Gaza and the Dead Sea. His functions combined military and administrative responsibilities, but the Jews were granted a fair degree of self-governance. The Jewish religious leaders in the form of the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem retained various judicial functions over their own people, but the death sentence was not something they were allowed to carry out. They had to get Roman approval for that. Because of political and religious problems, the Romans considered Judea one of their hardest provinces to govern. On two occasions prior to the trial of Jesus, Pilate had experienced major conflict with the Jewish people. One occurred on his very first visit to Jerusalem. He was accompanied by a large detachment of soldiers, each company of which had a standard that they carried before their group. On the top of each standard was a little metal bust of the emperor Tiberius. Since the emperor was regarded as a god by the Romans, the Jews considered that little bust to be a graven image and believed it contradicted the first commandment. They pleaded with Pilate to remove the images, but he refused to do so. When Pilate returned to his headquarters in Caesarea, the Jews followed him and dogged his steps for 5 days, demanding an apology. Finally, he told them to meet him in the amphitheater, where he surrounded them with soldiers and threatened to kill them on the spot if they did not cease their demands. Well, they called his bluff. They bared their necks and invited the soldiers to cut their heads off. And Pilate knew he was beaten. This is how Pilate's tenure in Palestine began. It was not a very auspicious beginning. A second conflict occurred not long afterward. The Jerusalem water supply was low, and Pilate felt he needed to create a new aqueduct. He didn't have the money to do it, however. And so he raided the temple treasury, which was just about like Fort Knox. He justified that on the basis that much of this water was needed to wash away the blood of 200,000 sacrifices. But the Jews considered the raiding of the temple treasury to be sacrilege. And they rioted. Pilate mingled his soldiers among the people in plain clothes, and at a given signal, they slaughtered hundreds of Jews. This incident is mentioned by Jesus in a sermon illustration in Luke chapter 13, verse 1. The confrontations that I've just mentioned between Pilate and the Jews were really minor compared to his most troubling predicament, and that is the trial of Jesus of Nazareth. Pilate happens to be in Jerusalem during Passion Week because this was a week when there were hundreds of thousands of people from out of town. Passions were high, and he needed to be there in order to keep control of everything. He is awakened in the early hours before dawn, on the day before Passover, by a mob which demands that he deal with a prisoner of theirs. The urgency is that they need to get his execution over with before Passover so that they won't defile themselves. The hypocrisy of such a request is evident to anyone. Actually, by the time Jesus is brought to Pilate's judgment hall, he has already gone through one kangaroo court. You'll remember that he was brought to the home of the high priest, probably referring to Annas, the high priest emeritus. High priests retained their title as long as they lived. And it was in the courtyard of that home where Peter denied three times that he knew who Jesus was. From there, he was sent on to Caiaphas, who is the ruling high priest. And I want us to pick up the reading at that point. In chapter 22, verse 63, and we will read into chapter 23, verse 25. 22:63. The men who were guarding Jesus began mocking and beating him. They blindfolded him and demanded, "Prophesy, who hit you?" And they said many other insulting things to him. At daybreak, the council, the elders of the people, both the chief priests and teachers of the law met together, and Jesus was led before them. "If you are the Christ," they said, "tell us." Jesus answered, "If I tell you, you will not believe me. And if I asked you, you would not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the mighty God." They all asked, "Are you then the Son of God?" He replied, "You are right in saying I am." Then they said, "Why do we need any more testimony? We have heard it from his own lips." Then the whole assembly rose and led him off to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We have found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Christ, a king." So Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus replied. Then Pilate announced to the chief priests and the crowd, "I find no basis for a charge against this man." But they insisted, "He stirs up the people over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee and has come all the way here." On hearing this, Pilate asked if the man was a Galilean. When he learned that Jesus was under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased, because for a long time he had been wanting to see him. From what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform some miracle. He plied him with many questions, but Jesus gave him no answer. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were standing there vehemently accusing him. Then Herod and his soldiers ridiculed and mocked him. Dressing him in an elegant robe, they sent him back to Pilate. That day, Herod and Pilate became friends. Before this, they had been enemies. Pilate called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I have examined him in your presence and have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he sent him back to us. As you can see, he has done nothing to deserve death. Therefore, I will punish him and then release him." With one voice, they cried out, "Away with this man! Release Barabbas to us!" Barabbas had been thrown into prison for an insurrection in the city and for murder. Wanting to release Jesus, Pilate appealed to them again, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" For the third time, he spoke to them, "Why? What crime has this man committed? I have found in him no grounds for the death penalty. Therefore, I will have him punished and then release him. But with loud shouts, they insistently demanded that he be crucified, and their shouts prevailed. So Pilate decided to grant their demand. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, the one they asked for, and surrendered Jesus to their will. It is at about daybreak when Jesus arrives at the Sanhedrin, where he acknowledges before all the chief priests and scribes that he is indeed the Son of Man, the Son of God. And chapter 22 ends with all the religious leaders in agreement that they don't need to hear anymore. He's claimed to be the Son of God. That's blasphemy. He is worthy of death. But they cannot legally put him to death. So Jesus is brought to the palace of the Roman governor, Pilate. Once again, Jewish scruples surface, not allowing his accusers to come into a Gentile palace. So Pilate goes out to them. It's now very early in the morning. So Pilate comes out and he asks what their charges are against this man. And they level four different charges. He is misleading the nation. He is opposing the payment of taxes to Caesar. He claims to be Christ, a king, and he is stirring up the people. In response to these charges, Pilate repeatedly declares Jesus not guilty of all charges. For one thing, none of these charges are capital crimes for which Romans would put someone to death. But in addition, Pilate cannot even find any basis in fact that these charges are true. And he declares in verse 4, I find no basis for a charge against this man. This is the first of at least four and maybe seven declarations of innocence regarding Jesus, depending on how you harmonize the four gospels. Right here in Luke 23, we have three other declarations of innocence. Verses 14 and 15, you brought me this man as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I've examined him in your presence and found no basis for your charges against him. In the next sentence, he says he has done nothing to deserve death. And in verse 22, I have found in him no grounds for the death penalty. Even Pilate's wife asserts Jesus' innocence. Now, that's not found here in Luke, but it's found in Matthew 27 and verse 19, where it says that while Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message: don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him. Now, the point of stressing these declarations of innocence is twofold. First of all, to highlight for us the character of Jesus Christ. Even his enemies were willing to acknowledge that he was innocent. He was not guilty of any of these crimes. He was a perfectly innocent man. But another reason for stressing these is to remove any excuse from Pilate or from the Jewish religious leaders in regard to the action that they eventually took. This is a case where the evidence is not ambiguous, as in the murder trial that the Post-Dispatch has been highlighting the last few weeks. The evidence here is watertight, and it shows clearly that Jesus is innocent. Pilate sees this, and yet he tries every conceivable way to extricate him from responsibility for Jesus' death. First, he simply refuses to approve the death penalty. Following Pilate's first declaration of the innocence of Jesus, that was back in verse 4, he orders the Jews to deal with the case themselves. Now, this is not obvious from Luke's account, but it is from John's. In John 18, verse 31, Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. But we have no right to execute anyone," the Jews objected. They want the death penalty, and they need Roman help in order to get the death penalty for Jesus. Pilate realizing that he is dealing with an irrational mob, sees suddenly a glimmer of hope in getting rid of this case. They say that Jesus is a Galilean. He says, Galilee, Galilee, that's not in my territory. That's in Herod's territory. Herod's here, right in the city. I'm going to send him over to Herod. Let Herod deal with it. And that's what he does. He turns Jesus over to Herod's jurisdiction. It is perhaps 6 o'clock in the morning when Jesus arrives bound at Herod's residence. Though it is an ungodly hour, Herod is beside himself with happiness because he wants to see a miracle. He has been waiting for this for a long time. He's been hearing these words about miracles that Jesus has performed, and he would love to see one. But Jesus refuses even to speak to Herod. What could he say to someone who only wanted a demonstration of divine power? You know, Jesus never refused a sincere questioner, but Herod is not in that class. And Jesus never performed miracles just to titillate people. There's a song in Jesus Christ Superstar entitled Try It and See, which addresses Herod. It's kind of a blasphemous song, but that's the whole point. Herod was a blasphemous character. The song goes like this. Jesus, I am overjoyed to meet you face to face. You've been getting quite a name all around the place. Healing cripples, raising people from the dead. And now I understand you're God. At least that's what you've said. So you are the Christ. You're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine. That's all you need to do, and I'll know it's all true. Come on, King of the Jews. Jesus, you just won't believe the hit you've made round here. You are all we talk about, the wonder of the year. Oh, what a pity if it's all a lie. Still, I'm sure you can rock the cynics if you try. So you are the Christ. You're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool. If you do that for me, then I'll let you go free. Come on, King of the Jews. Herod was a blasphemous man, and there are still those like him today who trifle with Jesus, who call him the man upstairs, who use his name as a common curse word. It's even blasphemous to call him a great teacher, if that's as far as you go with him, because he didn't claim to just be a great teacher. He claimed to be the Son of God. It's a dangerous game. Well, Herod and his soldiers mock Jesus and ridicule him. They dress him in an elegant robe, but Pilate's hope that Herod will dispense with this case is short-lived, for Herod sends him right back to Pilate. In verse 16, Pilate makes his third attempt to avoid responsibility for Jesus' death. He suggests a compromise by offering to punish Jesus. I will punish him and then release him, he says. Isn't that strange? He's already said he's an innocent man. Why punish an innocent man? Well, in Pilate's mind, there's a reason for this. Flogging Jesus is better than executing him. Flogging an innocent man is better than executing an innocent man. Besides, he will probably tell his soldiers to pull their punches. Don't hit him quite so hard. But this too, the Jews reject. Pilate's fourth attempt has to do with an unusual tradition among the Jews. He offers to release Jesus as the Passover criminal. Now, the Jews had a custom of releasing a criminal on the Passover once a year. A gesture of celebration, a gesture of kindness. The Apostle John tells us at the end of chapter 18 of his gospel that Pilate latches on to this custom as an opportunity to escape the dilemma that he is facing. He can release Jesus, which he plainly wants to do, but at the same time judge him guilty, because only a guilty prisoner can be released as the Passover prisoner. And since he won't actually be acquitting Jesus, that ought to satisfy the Jews. So both sides win. But but the scheme does not work. Even this apparently foolproof plan is totally frustrated when the Jews yell out in a terrible frenzy, "Away with this man! Release Barabbas to us!" Now, one cannot appreciate fully the significance of this until you realize that Barabbas was an insurrectionist. He was a man who had committed treason. He was a murderer. This is like people asking for the government to release Tim McVeigh instead of Billy Graham. So again, Pilate is foiled. His fifth attempt is found in verse 22. Again, he tries to compromise, ordering Jesus to be flogged and crowned with thorns to stir up sympathy. The second offer to punish Jesus here is found in Luke 23:22, but the actual deed is recorded in the early verses of John chapter 19. You know, when the Romans scourged a prisoner, they would tie him to a post, and then they would take a whip with thongs coming out of it, embedded in that. Those thongs were pieces of lead and sharpened pieces of bone. And they would swing this whip across the person's back and literally rip their back to shreds. And many prisoners lost consciousness through this ordeal. Some even died. And many went stark raving mad. And as if being scourged is not sufficient, they take a crown of thorns and force it onto Jesus' head and hit him in the face. Surely, Pilate thinks, surely this will satisfy these bloodthirsty mongrels. But he doesn't realize that the sight of blood only increases their demonic frenzy. He parades the suffering Jesus before the crowd. When Pilate says to the crowd, "Here is the man," John 19:5, he uses an expression that in classical Greek means, "Look at this poor creature." And what Pilate is saying to the people is, "Can you believe that this man is a threat to you? You see how pitiful he looks? Why don't you just let him go?" But they yell, "Crucify, crucify." He has failed again. The sixth attempt to release Jesus is found also in John 19, where after a troubling conversation with Jesus, he tries to release him again, but the Jews intimidate Pilate by mentioning Caesar. These are the last words between Pilate and Jesus, and they are, to me, the most profound. Pilate asks Jesus, "Where do you come from?" But Jesus refused to answer. And then Pilate says to him, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" And Jesus answers with these profound words, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." Those are words that every king and every prime minister and every president and every dictator should take to heart. All authority belongs to God, and he only delegates it for a temporary time period to certain leaders. I think these are also words that every persecutor of Jesus Christ and his church should take to heart, whether communist or fascist or humanist or atheist. These are words that every unbeliever should take to heart. God is still in control. And let his detractors never forget it, no matter how great their temporary authority or prosperity. And these are also words that every believer should take to heart. No matter how great the opposition that we face, or how great the trials are that we face, all authority has been given to Jesus Christ. We are on the winning side. Following this conversation, Pilate renews his efforts to set Jesus free. But the Jews pull out their trump card. "If you let this man go," they say in Luke 23, "you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." Now the wheels start turning in Pilate's head. He remembers those two previous incidents with the Jews, both of which had been reported to the emperor Tiberius. He knows he's on probation. He knows he can't afford another major confrontation. And he wants to keep his job. That's what's going through his head. John tells us when Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement. This is where sentences were handed down. It is now 7 or 8 in the morning, and Pilate has wrestled with this dilemma for perhaps 5 or 6 hours. He has sought every means he could think of to avoid condemning an innocent man, but every step he has taken has been frustrated. Now he makes one final effort to get out of this dilemma. Once more, he tries to use shame and sympathy with the Jews. With Jesus standing before him at the judgment seat, Pilate says to the Jews, "Here is your king." But they cry out, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." And Pilate asks, "Shall I crucify your king?" And then the chief priests make what is surely one of the most incredible statements ever to come from Jewish lips. "We have no king but Caesar." Think about that a moment. These are the same people who are willing to bare their necks to Pilate's soldiers just a few years before because they had a little metal statue of Caesar on their banners. They were willing to die to remove that little statue. And now, because of their hatred of Jesus, they're willing to say, "We have no king but Caesar." So far in this story, our sympathy is probably all with Pilate, and our disgust completely with the Jewish religious leaders. But you have heard it said that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Pilate is a man who had good intentions. He didn't want to condemn an innocent man. His intentions are honorable. But his actions turn out to be completely despicable. Pilate condemns an innocent man while futilely declaring his own innocence. Luke tells us in verse 24, "So Pilate decided to grant their demand. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, the one they asked for, and surrendered Jesus to their will." Listen to one final passage, if you will. This comes from Matthew chapter 27, verses 24 and 25. The context is immediately before the release of Barabbas. It says, "When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. 'I am innocent of this man's blood,' he said. 'It is your responsibility.'" He declared himself innocent, but he could not make himself innocent. The fact remains that Pilate acceded to the condemnation of an innocent man. Perhaps his guilt is not as great as that of the Jewish religious leaders. In fact, Jesus himself said so. Jesus said they have greater sin, John 19:11. But greater sin on their part still means sin on his part. And you know, friends, it may be that you have judged Jesus guiltless. It may be that in your heart of hearts you have said regarding him, "That is an innocent man." But if that's as far as you have gone, if you have not received him as the Lord of your life, then you too have acceded to his death as Pilate did. There are many emotions which are conjured up at the mention of Pilate's name. One thinks of coward. One feels emotions of anger and contempt and bitterness and scorn. But the emotion that wells up the strongest in my own heart when I think of Pilate is the emotion of pity. What a pitiful man this was. He is pitiful, first of all, because he pursues political expediency at the expense of truth. The threat of the loss of his own position as governor of Judea is more serious to him than the possibility of shedding innocent blood. And I can't help but see a parallel in our own day to politicians who, because of their desire to be reelected, advocate abortion on demand, resulting in the shedding of innocent blood to the tune of over 1 million babies a year. We need political leaders and religious leaders and leaders in our homes that will stand on issues because they are right, not because they are popular. We need people who are people of integrity to lead us. Pilate is pitiful because he pursued political expediency at the pursuit of truth. Secondly, Pilate is pitiful because he seeks to alleviate his conscience through religious rite. The washing of the hands was a religious ritual of great significance to the Jews. You can read about it in Deuteronomy 21, 6 through 9. It seems that Pilate borrowed this custom from the Jews to alleviate his own conscience. But nothing is more worthless than a religious rite which has no reality of faith behind it. Today we see scores of thousands of people who are using religious rites like baptism and church membership and good works and tithing and countless other things to achieve a right standing with God. But there is no reality behind those religious rites. And it doesn't count for anything with God when it is not backed up by true faith. One of the common tourist sites in Rome is the sacred stairs of the judgment seat of Pilate. It is believed by many people that these are the actual marble stairs brought to Rome from Jerusalem that Pilate judged Jesus by, although the history would not verify that. Still, the devout pilgrim who ascends these stairs on his knees believes that he receives special merit and grace from God. It was while he was on just such a pilgrimage of devotion, on those very stairs, that Martin Luther was struck by the fact of what Romans says, the just shall live by faith. And Martin Luther came to personal faith in Jesus Christ on those stairs in the city of Rome 500 years ago. He came to realize that all the religious rites in the world don't accomplish anything if a person does not have a living faith. Pilate is pitiful, thirdly, because he bargains for temporary rather than eternal security and loses both. Pontius Pilate desperately wants to keep his job in Judea. And he decides that the best way to do that is to yield to the demands of these bloodthirsty Jews. But secular history tells us that at the age of 36, less than 2 years after this incident, he was recalled to Rome by the Emperor Tiberius due to still another confrontation and conflict with the Jews. And only Tiberius' death while Pilate was on his way back to Rome kept him from certain execution. But within 2 years after the time he got back to Rome, he himself had committed suicide. He had bargained for temporary security rather than eternal security, and he lost both. You know, Pilate would never know it, but he would eventually become the most famous Roman of ancient history. For millions and millions of people who knew little about Julius Caesar or Augustus or Tiberius or even Nero would regularly confess, "I believe in Jesus Christ who suffered under Pontius Pilate." A pitiful epitaph for a pitiful man. What would God have us carry away from this examination of this man's life today? I think the answer is found in the words of Jesus. "For what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his own soul?" What shall it profit a man if he gained popularity or job security or wealth or family or friends or knowledge but loses his own soul? It gains absolutely nothing. But Jesus Christ, of whom Pilate himself said multiple times, "I find no fault in him," offered his perfect life to pay for our sin. And through faith in him, we can have our sins forgiven and receive eternal life. If you have never trusted Christ as your Savior, won't you do it today? Learn from this pitiful man, Pilate, and trust Jesus. Let's bow our heads in prayer.